back, pulls up the three, boom, knocks it down. Curry from the corner at three, puts it in.
For overtime, makes it, Garrett, Murray.
Welcome to the MVP cast. For me, Mark Woods, my guest is an Olympian, a Great Britain guard, a globetrotter, but I think for the purposes of this edition, our very own Canadian correspondent after a few days when Toronto was the epicenter of the entire basketball world. So let's say hello, Ontario, and welcome in Cal Johnson to the podcast. Cal, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, man. I really appreciate it.
Give us a sense. We're recording this just before Game 3 of the NBA Finals. And obviously, we're all kind of watching it. There's lots of British connections to the Raptors in particular. But over there, we've seen the Jurassic Park parties. We've seen the sort of national fervour. You're on the ground. What's it been like to be in the vicinity of Toronto during this historic week?
It's actually crazy. You kind of have to be here to see it. Like, it's one thing for the whole city to be behind the team, but it's not just the city, it's like the country, you know. Even like when I was in Newfoundland for that little bit of time there recently, just for any playoff game, it's packed for the Raptors, you know, at different restaurants, bars, you name it. And then you come home now and, you know, it's the finals, you have all these celebrities out here and TV analysts and stuff. And yeah, it's just crazy. You can't, honestly, you won't even want to drive downtown during the game because it's just too many people in the streets. And then after when they won game one, there's a bunch of, you know, just a bunch of people in the streets, good energy, good vibes. So it's good. It's good to see.
Has this sort of felt like peak basketball? Because you've had, you know, it's 20 years of the Raptors. And obviously in that period of time, basketball in Canada has exploded in terms of talent, in terms of visibility, and now you've got the Raptors playing for the title.
Yeah, honestly, it is. And it's crazy because they've been knocking on the door for the last few years. And basketball's been growing in Canada so much. There's so much, the young kids and stuff, they're taking it to another level too, you know. But as far as the Raptors, yeah, and it's funny because you drive down the street now, you just see all these kids in Raptors jerseys and stuff playing basketball. But it's always been like that, you know. It's just good that the national recognition is here now, you know, because basketball's really been growing in Canada for a long time, and it's just good that it might take this, and you know, hopefully it just continues to grow and get bigger.
Obviously, you know Nick Nurse from when he was assistant to the Great Britain team, and a lot of us here obviously have followed his entire career from when he was back in Derby through Manchester and London, places like that. But you played for him then. Yeah. And I think he was coaching somewhere in mainland Europe at that point in time. But is it curious now to see Nick Nurse as the guy who's led the Raptors to the NBA Finals?
Yeah, it's crazy. It's kind of surreal. Cause like, I would remember like I started with the Futures program with GB, you know, and Nick was was the coach, you know, and he's the one that kind of brought me and it was me and Andrew Lawrence. I got brought up to the men's camp, and you know, we ended up sticking and yeah, playing for him. He's always been a guy that was good for us, or good for, you know, the young guys, encouraging us and stuff like that, and the way that his coaching style is. And to see him at the top now, he's the most talked about coach, you know, probably in North America, let alone, you know, in the whole basketball scene, right? So it's good. I mean, I reached out to him just to say congrats and stuff like that. And you know, I really do want to see them win. So hopefully Toronto can win this championship.
I mean, give us an insight of someone who's played under him. What makes Nick a good coach?
I just think that he's very innovative. Like he's always trying. I don't know. I mean, for me as a young guy with GB, he used to always just say, just, you know, don't just, you know, play fearless, like just always words of encouragement, you know, different, he'll tell you stuff on the side to kind of help you, you know, just stay positive and you know, it's just been a very, very, you know, good influence basketball wise. But as a coach, he also, you know, he tries things, you know, and as you can see, everyone keeps talking about this boxing one that he was trying on the Warriors last game. And it doesn't really surprise me, you know, because, you know, he'll try things, you know, and at the end of the day, if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. And he'll take the fall for it. But, Majority of the time it works. And I think that's why, you know, he kind of got the job in Toronto in the first place, you know, because he was the assistant there. And they didn't go too far away once the head coach, they moved on from the head coach. They brought him up. He knows the players and stuff. I think it's just that little bit of, extra, something a little different, he'll shake things up a little bit. And I think it's worked for them.
When you look at basketball in Canada, and everyone, whenever I talk to people, they all talk about the Vince Carter factor, because that was the time when people, everyone liked hockey, everyone watched hockey in Canada,
exactly.
And then there was a big generation that saw Vince Carter and suddenly thought, oh, there's something else here that we could play. And now, 2 decades on, you've got tons of number one draft picks in the NBA, they've got guys like yourself playing internationally, all that kind of stuff. I mean, and now you have this. Does this put Canada in an even stronger position now with another whole generation of kids that might even, dare I say it, forget about hockey and think, yeah, basketball's our first option here?
As a basketball player, hopefully. the thing is like in Canada or in Toronto especially, Toronto's a very, very supportive place, and the fans are hungry. They would love to see hockey reach the top. But at the same time, if it's basketball, they're going to rally behind it. If it's baseball, they're going to rally behind it. But definitely, I think basketball is up and coming. And not up and coming. Well, it definitely is up and coming towards the hockey level, and hopefully it surpasses it. Everybody plays it. Everybody plays it now. And for me, it was Vince Carter. Growing up, watching the Raptors, Vince Carter, I can't lie, he was... it was incredible watching him. And it's like every star that's been in Toronto growing up, they've done a little bit of time, they've left, and they've blossomed. You know what I mean? So you now, it was Kyle Lowry, DeMar DeRozan, they wanted to stay. They stayed and signed contracts, because Vince Carter left, Tracy McGrady left, Chris Bosh left. A lot of guys, they came, were successful and left. And then this point right now, seeing the Raptors doing well, and it's really good.
It was interesting. I think it was during game one, they had a lineup of former Raptors, and Bosch was there, McGrady was there, Damon Stoudemire was the original draft pick was there, and then you put on screen and Del Curry was there, and apart from Bosch, all of them did 3 years and ran out of time, or more or less. And it's an interesting thing now is, do you become a legit franchise when people really want to come and stay? Whereas Toronto used to be the place. And Vancouver as well, before the Grizzlies moved south. So you went because you had to go, and then you got out as quickly as you possibly could.
Exactly.
Go ahead, Cal.
No, I was just going to say, the thing that started to cut you off is like, a lot, because it's Canada, and a lot of the guys, they want to stay in America. It's cold here in the winters, for different reasons. It's just different, but I'm just happy that the Raptors are winning, and you're seeing the fan support, you're seeing the support. So now I think it's going to attract more players, if anything, to be like, it's not that bad over there, and that's it's always been a nice city. It's always been a nice place. So it's just good that now it's on a national stage where everyone can see it.
It's just different because you spell English the correct way. That's what's kind of different about Canada and what's good about Canada. The other thing about Canada, a lot of your career has been spent in Europe, but you've had spells back in the Canadian League. And obviously, everyone kind of looks at the NBA. That's the Raptors in the NBA. That's the top league, effectively. But it's still surprising that a country now that is building a rich legacy of its own basketball doesn't have a league in the same way that European countries have. That is such it's a focus and people talk about it. And, if I look online, if I'm looking to see how you're doing in your games, you don't see huge amount of coverage around it. I mean, is that probably the one thing that the country's missing, is a league that's up there with, bigger leagues in other countries?
Yeah, definitely. The thing with the Canada League here right now is that it's run by, a group of owners, and it's not really sanctioned by FIBA or anything like that. So it's not, it's a very tricky league. It's like Canada's really missing something where it's, where it's like a league that, you see, the thing with Canada is tough because you can't put teams too close to Toronto because they want to see the Raptors. They want to see the 905. Like, it's very tricky. So they the league that is in Canada now has a lot of potential, but doesn't have a lot of people behind it to make it go to the next level, you know? So you have a decent amount of players in there that are good quality and stuff like that. But the rules are kind of tricky. You have 12-minute quarters, right? Then you're allowed to slap the ball off the rim, which is like a FIBA rule. Then, you know, then you can make trades in the league with the owners and stuff. And it's not FIBA sanctioned. And, like, it's very, 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 very tricky. But there's definitely potential. And, you know, especially in this day and age, it would be nice to see, you know, Canada have a league that gets respect around the world and takes off. Be honest.
Talking about respect from this league, now you go back a few months ago, you played a chunk of the season for Boulogne in the French league. Then you go back, you signed for St. John's in the Canadian league towards the end of the season. I think you were an injury replacement or something.
Yeah.
Of that ilk.
Yeah.
And then they say you can't play. Tell us about that.
I was in France in Boulogne for the year. I had an injury in January. My team ultimately decided to move on. We settled up, you know, with my contract. So I was home rehabbing and stuff like that. And then, so an opportunity came up to go play in St. John, you know? So typically from what I heard is, you have to play a minimum of 6 games to be eligible to play in the playoffs. Right. So before I signed, you know, my team asked for, they took asked the league for an exemption, took a vote. The league voted yes, you can sign this player, the injury replacement for the playoffs, because typically it was for the semifinals and the finals. That's basically what I was coming in for. So I was looking at it, okay, sure, yeah, it's an opportunity if I can play, why not? You know, it's probably, you know, a chance to get back, a chance to play for another championship. The previous 2 years, I won 2 championships with London. So came in there, and then I played the 2 games, you know, we go up 2-0 in the best of 7 series. And then the league turns around and says, yeah, you can't, we're going to take our decision back. You can't play anymore, you know? And honestly, it's just like, it's kind of crazy because that's what I'm saying. There's no real rules behind it. You know, it's kind of, you just pick here, okay, yeah, you can do this here. Oh, nope, you can't do this here. And then the player is the one that gets screwed. So, you know, obviously I wasn't too happy about that, man, because I come in and do my job every day, man, no matter where, no matter what league or whatever, I'm going to come in every day, I'm going to do my job, I'm going to try to get better. So, you know, it's just really, really disappointing. And these are kind of the things that hopefully, you know, they get addressed and they won't happen again. Because for me, just say no from the beginning. You know, don't say, yes, you can play. And then after 2 games, you can't play. And then say, oh, yeah, maybe you could play again. But no, people are talking about it too much now, so we can't let you play again. Like, it's just a lot. There was just a lot going on. And, you know, for me, I had good experiences in the National Basketball League of Canada when I was in London. You know, and I didn't have any problems or anything. It was, you know, we won. Things were good. And I got, and then, you know what, I wanted to go back to Europe because it's a longer season, more stability, you know, better coaching, more skill development, stuff like that. So ideally I was kind of already done with the NBL, but this opportunity came up to play in the playoffs. I was like, sure, why not? And then I go through this scenario. It's just really is frustrating, but, you know, hopefully they clean these things up and it doesn't happen to another player, let alone another Canadian player like that in the future.
Let's pause the podcast for just a moment to ask for your help. We'd like to produce more episodes of the MVP cast. That's more conversations and more stories you've not heard before from around the world of basketball. To do that, we'd love your support in becoming a patron. If you value the show, why not pledge a few pounds each month to help keep it going? We'll even give you a shout out as our way of saying thank you. Find out more by going to MVP247. Clicking on the podcast page and going to the patron link.
Cal Johnson's our guest on the MVP cast, and you're at this stage of the year. I mean, you've played in, I think, 4 different European countries, Greece, Cyprus, Italy, France. And you get to this point, you're a free agent again. We're at the very start of the summer. What's the kind of typical process for you at this point in the year when you're out of contract and you're looking for that deal for next season?
To be honest, I try not to take as much time off. But for me, I want to you want to rehab your injuries if you have any, try to get as fit and healthy as possible, and then also work on your game and try to add something to your game. You know, I'm not getting any younger, and all the young guys are coming up, so you got to try to, you know, make sure you're healthy and in shape. And then in the summer, I've always looked forward to playing for GB. That's always been a staple for me. So I know a lot of guys, they'll just get ready for their preseasons or whatever. But me, I usually spend my summers trying to get ready for GB and the competition coming up. And that's about it, really. I might take a little vacation early June. This year, I'm not. But, you know, you want to typically rehab your injuries, get healthy, and then work on your game, add something to your game, and get ready for wherever you're going next. And hopefully, you know, you get your you find out where you're going earlier on in the summer rather than later, and you get prepared for that.
Do you when you sort of sit and you plan that summer, and you know, obviously there's different countries that you could go to, and obviously your agent comes forth with, you know, who's interested and all that kind of stuff. But how much now do you, because you're more aware of the European basketball scene, how much more careful are you in terms of picking the right opportunity rather than going A for the first opportunity, or maybe just for the one that throws the biggest amount of bucks in front of you at the very start?
Me personally, I'm so careful because 2012, when I was in Monte Gennaro, I went through a situation where my team went through money problems and I didn't get all my money. And that, you know, it was bad. I took them to court, had to go through that process. Then the team went bankrupt and all types. So for me, I can't, you know, after that experience, I'm very careful. You know, if there's any risk that you're not going to get your money on time or you're not going to, you know, get all the money you signed for or whatever. Yeah, you're playing for the love of the game or whatever, but at the same time, it's a job. And, you know, at this age right now, it's like I'll pass up on that opportunity for something more secure. You know, so that's why your agent, you want to hope that your agent, you know, does the due diligence and won't put you in a scenario that you're not going to, you know, be taken care of in a living situation. So for me, I look for, you know, I want to be comfortable. I might sacrifice a little bit more, you know, money just to be comfortable and be happy coming to work every day. You know, make, cause it's a long year, right? When you're abroad, you want to be comfortable. You don't want to have to worry about financials. You want the basketball to be proper. Cause you know, it could be 8 to 10 months. So, I don't really just jump at the first opportunity. But if it is a good opportunity, then I'll take it. This year for me in France, it was a good opportunity. So I signed, I want to say June 23rd last year. And, you know, it was nice to know where you were going for the whole summer and you can just prepare for that.
How tough is that process? I mean, you talk about the team, you know, it's Monte Gargano, you're playing Liga A in Italy. So yes. A really good league. And then, but as we know, Italy, Greece, you know, as good as the basketball can be, teams have a habit of not being financially the most prudent. But you get a situation like that. I mean, how do you fight that process? I mean, the arbitration process with FIBA is there, but you know, for a player, yes, your agent's involved in that, but you know, how time consuming and how nerve-wracking is it to go through that kind of process when you know maybe at the end of it the odds of success aren't that great?
To be honest, when I went through it, it was my second year in Europe, so I didn't really know anything really. I would just listen to the veteran guys that have been through it before, or you know, my agent at the time. And it was really tough because I was having a really good year in Monte Gennaro. Ended up starting near the end of the year. I had a 1+1, so you know, they wanted to bring me back for the next year, but you know, they still owed me a decent amount on my salary. I didn't, you know, they broke the contract, so you know, I moved on, went to another team. And while you're playing for the other team the next year, I remember getting to, I believe in the preseason, Monte Gennaro was telling teams that I was under contract still or whatever, but they breached the contract. I signed with Fiorentino, and they tried to send over paperwork saying that I'm still under contract. It was just a whole, it was a mess. But, anyways, you're dealing with that throughout the year. So now it's not even like you're able to focus on the game as much as you're also having to deal with this the lawyers and dealing with that. So, you know, it was a learning process for me as my second year. And I wish I could have stayed in Montreal. I wish that I wish everything went smooth because I really liked it there. It was a good situation for me. Coach was great. I was playing in the top league. It was really good. Just the financial aspect is the one that, you know, took a hit, but you learn from it as you go, you know, and I, you know, at the end of the day, you take it, you learn, you move on. And if you see certain signs again, then you kind of, you know what to look for, you know.
Do you have that feeling though? I mean, you turned 30 last December, and in that sort of mid-tier European leagues, I mean, there's a ton of guys out there that want jobs and that. I mean, of course, you're lucky you've got a European passport.
Yeah.
But do you ever sort of feel now that now you've turned 30, there is that feeling that maybe some teams won't sign you because they can just go for the young, hungry guy that you've got to kind of prove yourself in a different way or offer something different?
Yeah. No, definitely. Definitely. You think about that, but at the same time, you can just focus on things you can control. You know what I mean? And, you know, at the end of the day, I'm a believer in if you stay working on your craft, you stay professional, the right opportunity is going to come up. You take advantage of the opportunity when it does come up. And, you know, that's about it. You know, I can't control what's going on in the other GM's minds. I can just control coming in every day, working, having a good season, and then, you know, keeping the faith that a good opportunity is going to come up, and then you can take advantage of it and grasp it and play well.
Of all the places you've gone, you've had a good chance, and you've been to some nice places. You've not had to go to the Ukraines and Bulgarias in this world. What's been the favorite spot?
You know what? I'd say Italy's probably been my favorite spot. It has probably been my favorite spot, you know, just because also at the same time when I was there, I've had, you know, friends of mine that have been there too. And, you know, it's fun playing in the top league there. And, and the competition's really good. The weather's good. The food's good. You know, so I've been pretty blessed to be in some nice countries. France was really good this year. It was fun. You know, Greece was, I was really, really young. Greece and Cyprus, I was really, really young. And that was my first experience, you know, kind of living away for so long. And if I could do it again, I would because, you know, as long as it's a stability situation, I would because it's a really, really nice place. You know, both those countries over there. But then there's also some countries I haven't been to that I'm definitely, if the opportunity came up, I would definitely try to, you know, grasp it and take advantage. I just been, I guess, you know, fortunate enough to say that I've been in the country that I have so far.
Given that there are a few teams with bigger budgets now, would playing in the BBL, you know, coming to the UK for a year be an attraction to you?
It would. You know, I've talked with a few teams, and I definitely would consider it and would do it as long as the right situation came up. I know a couple of my friends now have been playing there for a while and are playing there now, and it's nice to see that, you know, the budget is going up in the BBL, and I'm definitely open to playing in the BBL in the future.
We mentioned turning 30 and a landmark time in any young man's life. And when you look sort of beyond basketball, and yeah, it's safe to say you're not retiring on the earnings from playing in Europe or Canada. But do you start to kind of look and say, yeah, what's after? When I finally hang up the shoe, when the phone doesn't ring one summer, what do I do?
Yeah, you think about it and you kind of, I've always told myself, you kind of want to I want to transition out. You know, if the next job coming up, I'm thinking of a few things right now. So I haven't really decided on exactly what the next job is, but if the transition was kind of where I'm okay with leaving the game, like I'm not okay with leaving the game just yet. But you want to leave when you're okay. And you know, you don't have that, that kind of drive to just keep going. So I don't know. I've had my eye on coaching. I do want to get into coaching. I haven't decided at what level yet, but so we'll see. I mean, I graduated with a business degree and marketing management. So that's another thing I've looked at too. But ideally, I kind of want to get into coaching. So we'll see. We'll see if the right opportunity comes up before I'm ready to be done playing or not. So,
because you've, I mean, you've worked with some really good coaches over the years in terms of junior coaches, DB coaches, etc. I mean, with that in mind, do you start to kind of piece together little things or just take a note of something or mentally just tune yourself in that way?
Yeah, to be honest, I've always asked questions and took notes and stuff like that. And even drills that coaches will show me, even when I was younger, I write them down. And I just ask the right questions when I, you know, just so, you know, in the future, you're not behind the eight ball, you know? So I try to stay in contact with, you know, my coaches from the past and, you know, pick their brain on a few things and just figure out the right steps to follow to do it. I've been blessed with some really good coaches. So I definitely try to pick their brain when I can.
We're 7 years removed from the Olympics. And what an Olympics it was. And, you know, going through an experience like that, when GB was living the high life, playing against big players. I mean, you're playing against LeBron and Kobe in warm-up games and massive audiences at the Olympics and everyone's following, etc. And, you've been one of the few guys that have stuck with the program. You've kept, obviously, club commitments pending, but you've been in and out. I mean, how do you perceive that program now? Because at times you've sat on the inside and you've talked to teammates playing over here and you've seen some of the things going on behind the scenes with coaches and money and resources and all that kind of stuff. I mean, what's your perception level being in that, within that sphere at this point in time?
I just wish that there wasn't a drop-off, you know, I've been fortunate when I started in 2011. Obviously the funding was there, the backing was there. The play in the I guess you could say the highest level competition. It was good, and I think that's the direction that GB was going on the up, you know. And I just wish that it would stay like it was going up, you know. You can only imagine where, you know, would it be right now. But for me, I'll always play for GB as long as I'm called for, because that opportunity that they gave me to play when I was a young guy, you know, I was one of the, you know, two youngest guys on the team. You know, that was my best experience as a, you know, as a professional. And to be honest, it's, you know, it's been probably the most consistent thing every summer, being able to play for GB and play in the different competitions. So I'll always play for GB when called upon, because it means more to me than, you know, than the money that, you know, I'm trying to help the funding get back, you know, and whatever I can do to help, you know, try to help GB in any way, shape or form, I'll always try to do that, even if the funding went down for the players or not. And I just want to see things get back to the way that it was.
How much do you kind of wish that, I mean, you talked about that job, but how much do you kind of wish, despite, you know, obviously funding and insurance and things like that that people talk about, how much do you wish a few of those guys that disappeared after 2020 had kind of stuck with it and you guys had been in this run together and seen where it might lead, rather than you kind of got to 2012 and although there was a Europeans after that, that no one ever really saw where the end destination might have been?
Yeah. I wish that, I do wish that everyone stuck together and we continued on. You know, I can't speak for the other guys. I could just speak for myself. And, you know, being that young guy, I wish that everyone stuck together. And, you know, I just, who knows what it would become now. But it's nice still playing with the same guys that have been there from, you know, even before me or the same time as me. And, you know, just seeing the same face every summer or the same guys that, you know, it's nice seeing those guys. So, you know, at the end of the day, you can just deal with what's in front of you. And it's nice to think back and wish that, you know, everyone would have continued playing. But at the end of the day, it is what it is. So
that Olympics, before we come on to GB as going forward, that Olympics, tell us about the homecoming party you got laid on after coming back from London 2012.
Yeah, it was amazing. I remember all those experiences. It was just amazing, man. Even when we got off the plane, because we had a camp in Houston, and even just coming back before the Olympics, leading up to it, before we played USA, before we played, you know, all these exhibition games, and you know, there's a bunch of fans there, people there, support, and then when you leading up to it, once you get to the village and stuff, and you're coming out last in the opening ceremonies, and you know, just the reception from the crowd, just the moment, you know, you're kind of just trying to live in it. And it's a really, really cool moment. And I wish that I'd get to do it again, but you know, it is what it is. I'm very, very, very proud and very, very, very happy to say I was able to do it. Special.
Because am I right in thinking when you went back to Canada after the games, there was a club hired for your welcome home party?
Not right after the Olympics, because I had to miss the closing ceremonies. Actually, I was put in a situation where I was like, all right, come straight to France, or not France, straight to Italy, or you know, go home, take your stuff home quickly, and then come back to Italy. So I literally just, when I had like four or five, you know, bags with me, I just, you know, I just took home quick, you know, see the family, stuff like that. Yeah. And then I jumped right back to Italy. I didn't know any better. I was so young, man. I was just listening to, you know, that my agent at the time and all this. And I barely had any time to, I didn't even get to go to the closing ceremonies. It was kind of crazy, but, yeah, I guess you could say maybe my family had a little something for me when I got home, but yeah.
Does that mean you never got to wear those famous white shell suits, track suits that everyone else got to wear?
I wore those. I had that for that was the opening ceremonies. The closing was something else, and I wore it all. I still have it all. I definitely wore it all. I tried everything on, man. That was such a good experience.
You get it out for special occasions and walk around the room during the closing ceremony.
No, I'll hand it on. I'll pass it off to my kids. I gave a lot of my stuff to family and stuff like that as well. I have everything, but we had different sets of stuff. And whether I signed some stuff, gave it to my high schools, or you know, different kids, auction stuff, some stuff off when I have camps and stuff here. You know, it's definitely really good.
GB this summer, there's we call it the second pre-qualifiers to get into the qualifiers for Eurobasket next year. And I mean, my understanding from talking to people around British basketball is, as we stand, and those are mid-August, and it's Kosovo and Luxembourg that GB have to beat to get through. But my understanding from talking to people is there is no money for those qualifiers right now. And no one knows how that will be funded. And, you know, some people are suggesting it might be a team of BBL players. It might be a team of under 20 players. When you hear that, and we're talking about what was at 2012 to now, what does that make you think about how this program might end up?
Man, it's scary. You know, it's scary. It's honestly, it's scary, man, because, you know, you're talking about a national team. You're talking about a national team, and it's like, yeah, I don't know. I you just wish that won't happen, you know, because we've been, you know, dealing with the funding talks and for years now, you know, and you just hope that day doesn't come when it's like, there's absolutely like where there's no GB program anymore at all, you know? So hopefully, man, we've been saying this for years, hopefully the funding comes from somewhere, you know, and you can just pick things up and try to, you know, move forward. But if that day comes when there's no GB program, that's a shame, especially coming from, I mean, me thinking about 2011 when I started till now, you know, it's 2019, 8 years. That'd be sad, man.
I'll let you out of here on a slightly more positive note, or possibly a positive note. What's your predictions? Are the Raptors going to win this thing?
We'll see. The Warriors have a lot of injuries right now. Game three is tonight. I think the Raptors, they need to win this game tonight. They need to get one in Golden State, right? I think they need to get this one tonight if they do want to win the whole thing. But at the end of the day, I think it's going to be a long series. Golden State's not going anywhere. They've been in the finals 5 years in a row. So we'll see. It would be really, really nice to see the Raptors win. I think they just got to take advantage of, you know, right now Golden State has a lot of injuries. They need to try to grit this game tonight and then take it from there. The city will go crazy if the Raptors win the championship, though.
That was my next question. What would you be doing if the Raptors win this
thing? I'll be downtown. I'll be downtown. I might even go to Jurassic Park, man. We'll see. I haven't been yet. It's just too much. It's too crazy, man. But I said to my friends, I was joking around, if they go to a game seven, just for the atmosphere and everything, I'll definitely be around that Jurassic Park area, man. When they won the Eastern Conference Finals, right? I was just seeing the videos and stuff from the people downtown. You had people on cars, on buses, just excited. And you know what I mean? There was the one report that came out the next morning is through all the mayhem, there was not one arrest made, nothing. You know, it was all support, all love. And it's going to be crazy, man. The city, everyone jokes around and says the city might shut down. I think it'll be like a little holiday. Toronto fans have been waiting for this for a long, long time. But it's good. It's good because it brings everybody together, man. You have people that don't watch basketball every day literally just watching just to not miss it. You know, just, they don't want to miss it. And you know what the talk has been, too, is like with the tickets in the finals, the lowest ticket in Toronto, I think, is like $850 or $1,000, which is crazy. And you have people spending $25,000 for courtside or whatever it is. Like, it's insane. And the real Raptor fans obviously are mad because those tickets are bumped up way too high. And you have people in there that are just, you know, that can afford it or whatever. And it's just, it's crazy, man. So it's definitely, everybody's trying to be a part of this thing. So,
that's where you're calling Nick Nurse and going, Nick, old buddy, old coach, get me a ticket, please.
Everybody's definitely calling Nick right now. But he has so much to focus on, man. I've been to enough Raptors games and stuff, and for this moment right now, it's okay. I like watching with the family and stuff and my friends and seeing what happens. So
you heard it here first. If the Raptors win the championship, watch out for the TV pictures. There'll be the guy in the white tracksuit with the Team TV logo on it jumping around. We know who that'll be. It's a pleasure as always for talks. Thanks for joining us. We hope you have a smooth summer. I hope we'll see you playing for GB. Appreciate you joining us, and good luck whatever you're doing next.
No problem. Thanks for having me, man.
Thank you. That's it for this edition. You can subscribe to every episode of the MVP Cast via your preferred podcast provider or listen online at MVP247, where you'll also get all the latest basketball news. Another edition coming very soon. But for now, for me, Mark Woods, it's goodbye.